Woohoo!
Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday!
It's Tuesday!
And we have candlelight vibes at 4 a.m. over here on this Tuesday.
Why is it 4 a.m., Megan?
Because I'm heading to Vancouver and I have an exciting trip ahead, but we gotta record early before Leo gets up.
Oh my gosh. If you told me that this is what parenting would be, waking up at 4 a.m. to talk into a mic with my wife in the dark, I don't know what I would say. I think I'd be really excited, actually.
It's actually kind of what ultra running is.
Yeah.
You get out there at like 4 or 5 a.m. with a whole bunch of other people and make jokes. So we're just training.
Why do they do that to ultra runners? I'm so confused. We have no reason that we need to sleep deprive our athletes. All of these races should start at 8 a.m. as God intended.
I've thought about that, but here's my theory. It's pretty magical to run early. Like for me, I love getting out the door at 5 a.m. with a headlamp. Uh-huh. The bats are swooping down around me. Like,
yeah.
It feels magical and it feels great. But also runners can't sleep anyways before the race, so we might as well run the race a little bit earlier when everyone's up stewing in bed.
I disagree so much. I feel like we're just being masochistic with our runners. It actually reminds me a lot of an article I was reading about schools, that there's this whole movement to push the start date of or start time of schools back because it's all antiquated, related to when, you know, we're an agricultural society.
Mm-hmm.
And now it doesn't even align with parents' work schedules. You know, there's no reason to start kids at 7:45 a.m. and we're fucking up kids' sleep. So similarly, why are we fucking up ultra runner sleep, Megan?
That's a great question, but we can't sleep anyways.
Yeah.
That's my hot take.
Yeah. I actually had trouble sleeping last night too.
I did too. Actually, yeah. Anytime my alarm is set for a time before 4 a.m. and let's be real, it's kind of creeping up now into the fives.
Yeah.
I struggle to sleep. Yeah.
I just get too hyped. It's like when I wake up at like 1 a.m. and I'm just like, oh, well, it's almost time to wake up. I should probably just get up now and have my tea.
Especially for the podcast. I was up at 1 a.m. We should have had like a hot take session at 1 a.m. We could have done the podcast incrementally yeah. during the night because I had all these hot takes that were coming to me and I was like, I got to keep the vibes rolling all the way till 4 a.m.
Yeah. And they would have been such spicy, spicy takes because we got a new bed, which we recommend to everybody. It's one of those things. This is, it sounds like I'm about to do a sponsor plug.
Yes,
I am not.
Yeah.
This is just one of the, we have always slept on the jankiest hand-me-down bed that you could get for like $100 off the side of the road. And now we've upgraded and it's been pretty life-changing.
It's been great. Until this moment, I never really thought about the fact that we were on hand-me-down beds.
Yeah.
I'm glad I've never really thought about that too deeply.
Megan, our beds had whole biomes.
Yeah.
It was like the rainforest. There was a canopy. Yeah. We went all the way down to the understory. And then there was also roots. It was quite a healthy ecosystem.
And we laid down roots in there too.
Yeah, that's
yes,
true.
We contributed to the entire forest ecosystem.
Yeah, we're climate change yes. that ecosystem.
That's an amazing point. But we did get this bed and it's like been game changing for our sleep. But the big problem is that like we're sleeping so well that it's actually hard to get out of bed. Like we've been yeah. sleeping 8.5 to 9.5 to sometimes 10 hours every night. And I feel like crawling out of bed in the morning is this Herculean task that I'm not ready for.
And it's adjustable, which is pretty game-changing too. We have it set up where it almost looks like a slight V, where our legs are up, our head is up. Thankfully, we both have the same setting because we're not rich enough to have two different compartments. But Megan, we've really moved up in the world. We have our own bed. And it's a king size. Holy shit. If you had told us when we first met 13 years ago, do you remember what my apartment was like?
Oh my gosh, your apartment was a shithole, no, to be honest with you.
I mean, it was...
Okay, it was a shithole with a whole ecosystem.
Yeah.
There were roots in there, there were microbiome from many people, yeah. and a lot of your microbiome.
Okay,
well, all over the floor and the walls and the ceiling.
Well, it was a shithole, but I tried to do a little enema before you came, so you can imagine what it was like before that. But I had like a little twin-size bed that was just on the floor, just like a mattress on the floor. The walls were barren, you know, hadn't vacuumed in like 3 weeks. So we've gotten up in the game. Like we have moved up so much, Megan. I feel like this is a reflection on our relationship that we have moved up to an adjustable king-sized bed. That's amazing.
Well, if you apply your personality to an adjustable bed, here's what happens is you yeah. can't quite decide on the best adjustments for like sleep performance.
I want to optimize it.
Yeah, you're all about optimizing it. So the first night that we had the bed, all of a sudden I feel myself moving at 2 a.m. And it's because you're trying to figure out the exact head
yeah.
and feet arrangement to have our performance optimized. But we've settled in and it's great. But it's also so high off the ground that yeah. I feel like I'm doing hurdle drills every time I get into bed. And Addie, who is 11, still jumps onto the bed. But yeah. I feel like it's the high jump record for an 11-year-old dog to get up here.
She's crushing it. We're just trying to prolong her, you know, the quality of her life.
My hip labrums and her quality of life. That's what we're optimizing with the bed.
Also, if we were willing to splurge, had a bed that vibrated.
We should have done that just for the stories.
We should have.
We could have written it off for the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should have had like a remote setting so that when anybody ever came in our room, the bed just started vibrating. just because. Okay. So we're doing this at 4 a.m. all because you have to make a trip right now. Where are you going? What is it for?
I'm headed to Vancouver, which is great because technically it's international travel, but I'm going to Canada and it's 2.5 hours away. So after our Chamonix trip, I'm like, this is so easy. This is like running a 5K at a shuffle effort. It's great.
Yeah. And you get to go to Canada, and we love Canadians here.
The land of ketchup chips, the land of kind people. So yeah, I'm going for Lululemon. So they're planning out the Further project in March, which is a 6-day ultra marathon for 10 different athletes on the starting line. So this is a training camp, but there's some science. Athletes are coming together. So I'm excited. It'll be science, ketchup chips, time. I coach 3 of the athletes. Yeah. So really great in-person time with the athletes I coach. So it'll be fun.
So you're mainly going as coach, science advisor, and all around jack of all trades.
And ketchup eater.
Okay.
Yes.
Are you going to participate in the project?
No.
Okay.
I was actually considering in the early stages. I was like, there was like different iterations of the project that we were planning.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it became 6 days, I was like, fuck, I'm out. That's a long time. I'd much rather like be there and coach and see like the recap of it on the live feed 6 days later, because that seems daunting.
Well, I can't wait. It's going to be so fun to see what these women can do next March. And it's so cool to have been a part of it too.
Yeah. Well, Camille Heron's part of it. And she just broke the record at Spartathlon.
Wow. Yeah. I say wow, but that's kind of like my initial reaction whenever Camille does anything. I'm not exactly sure what Spartathlon is. For some reason, that one never really fell on my radar. Like,
yeah, me
neither.
Well, I feel like for us, like, we're so focused on trail races that I feel like sometimes like the longer road races aren't always on our radar.
Similar to Badwater, I guess. Like, I only know Badwater kind of. Like, I don't know that much about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Badwater makes me want to take a nap in a very comfortable bed. But Spartathlon, I think it's it's over 100 miles, and she ran under 24 hours. I think it's like 135.
It's 4,987 miles.
Yeah, and she could also do that in under 24 hours.
I wouldn't be surprised. So such a cool project. Camille Heron's doing it, Leah Yingling, Steph Lippin, Devin Yanko, and a cast of, you know, amazing athletes, scientists, researchers like you, coaches like you. So can't wait to see what comes of it.
Yeah, it's cool. Actually, I think this is the first time the starting line is so diverse. Like, we've got Camille Heron on the starting line, and then athletes that have never run an ultra before, and some athletes that had never even run before this project was started. And it's kind of cool to see what happens when you put a mix of like fun narratives on the starting line.
Yeah. And it's cool that Lululemon really seems to be supporting everyone pretty equally in this process. Like, they're stepping up and giving them all, you know, the pro athlete treatment. And I think that's a great model for the future too.
Oh, they roll out the red carpet. Yeah. It's actually, having been at other companies and having seen what athletes have gone through in terms of like contracts and how companies support them, I'm like, Lululemon, do they know what other companies do? Like, this is like, they're truly going above and beyond. And it like blows my mind.
I feel like when you're a multi-billion-dollar company, it gives you a little bit more wiggle room though.
That's a good point. That's very fair. But I mean, basically all these other companies are multi-billion-dollar companies.
It's true. But not like, not a lot of them though. I mean, I'm not sure what Ultra is like. Granted, I guess there are part of bigger conglomerates a lot of the times, like that are relatively large companies. So yeah, maybe it is a lesson there that everyone can apply.
Well, we got to be up close and personal with shoe companies yesterday, because yesterday was Saturday date day. This is the perks of recording on a Sunday, as we're coming in hot after our Saturday date day. And we spent some of it running together. And the other part, we went to Boulder Running Company and just tried on a bunch of shoes.
An hour and a half in a running shoe store is my dream.
And we made friends with a podcast listener, Rachel, who is an employee at Boulder Running Company. And she fully like, she was definitely our like best third wheel ever on a date, because she just kept bringing the shoes out like one by one. It was great.
So we've had major shoe reviews on the podcast before. This is just kind of like a hint of some of that. We're going to give you some quick thoughts we had on some shoes we tried, some of which we've been really excited to try, some of which we weren't at all, and Rachel just served up to us saying that they were either good or bad. So we want to just give you a quick window into what we thought.
And I'm going to take a start at this.
Yeah.
And it's because for me, whenever there's something like really exciting, I can't wait to reveal it. Like, I'm that little girl that like sits there and is like, I got a secret, I got to tell it.
Yeah.
We started with the Mach X.
And the Hoka Mach X, which is pretty relevant because you've heard us, if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, we shit on the Hoka Mach like it's our job.
It's a recurring bit at this point. I actually do stand by that. Like,
I'm not sure if I believe it. I think I've only even tried, like, maybe I tried the 1 and 2, but...
Well, I've heard the Mach 3 is pretty great.
Okay.
And I think we've been clear that this is based on the versions of the 1 and 2, which were arguably the worst shoe of all time.
And then, well, and also, it's just a bit at this point.
Yes,
it's a joke.
Yeah.
But we like to lean into it a little bit. Hoka's doing fine. They don't need our help. But what we did this time, because Rachel brought it out, and she said, I believe everyone at the store thinks this shoe is yummy, she brought out the Hoka Mach X, which I believe has some sort of plate in it. I don't believe it's carbon fiber.
It's not carbon plate.
I didn't research it, but she said it wasn't carbon fiber. And I put it on, Megan, and guess what?
It was yummy.
It was yummy.
It was so yummy.
It was Frito yummy.
Also, you looked so happy.
I did.
Like, you are a kid in the candy store at the shoe store, and sometimes it's like, I gotta drag you out of there.
Yeah.
But seeing you like the Mach X, it was like we're coming full circle on the Machs, but you jogged around the store, and honestly, I'm not gonna lie, it was a thing of beauty.
I mean, Megan, I was probably limping around because I got my ankle yet again on Saturday morning when I was running with you.
Yeah, on our date run. It was actually, it was really tragic. So we were running together, and on an uphill, all of a sudden, I just hear this like calamity behind me, and you're on the ground, and you looked up at me, and usually when you sprain your ankle, you say like, motherfucker, fuck, and you just looked up at me, and you're like, I sprained my ankle because you look so beautiful. I looked up. I didn't look at the trail. And it was like the sweetest moment in our relationship.
Yeah. I mean, it had really shown how resigned I was to this situation too. But you did look really beautiful. It was kind of worth it to fuck my ankle again because your ass was like banging.
I had never loved you so much as in that moment.
As when I said your ass was banging as I'm dying on the trail.
You were like laying totally, you were totally sprawled out on the trail. And you were so sweet and also so helpless at the same time. And it broke my heart.
I've lost where my ankle is in space. This happens sometimes. Like, you know, before Grindstone, I was thinking about this. I was planning on going to the chiropractor here, Larry Frieder, who is a foot and ankle expert. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to because of COVID when I got that diagnosis. And as a result, like I've just, that this one ankle, which is usually my good ankle, I don't know how I did what I did yesterday. It was on a non-technical uphill. I probably should not be anywhere with even the slightest rock, a curb. I shouldn't even be walking around the house without crutches right now until I get to Larry Frieder.
If that had been me that sprained your ankle, like every once in a while when I sprain my ankle, you go back to the trail and you're like, look, there's nothing there. And you were laying there on the ground and I was like, I can't revisit this moment.
You probably should have. I think I deserve that at that point. But we'll see. The good thing about the Mach X is I don't think it's really meant for trails. So I can probably wear it if I'm able to run over the next couple of days.
But that's actually why we went to BRC is because it launched this whole discussion that I do think sometimes ankle sprains are related to the footwear that you're wearing. Like I think some footwear that's like higher stack height, mix that with ankles that are a little bit unstable and the two come together for like ankle sprain city. And so we were trying to find you a trail shoe that was a little bit just like better for not spreading ankles. Yeah.
But then in that process, we got a little off track and started exploring all the different nooks and crannies of the shoe company. Or shoe store, as we are prone to do. And that's where the Mach X came in. So where the analogy for this shoe for me is the Saucony Endorphin Speed, which is kind of the training plated shoe for Saucony that you can wear for a lot of miles. I've worn that for a really long time. The Mach X feels a little bit softer, a little bit more supportive, same type of design. So where I envision this shoe being used is in more like training runs, but up-tempo training runs where you might progress or have fast strides. I'm probably, if I'm able to run today on this ankle, I'm going to wear it today for a fartlek workout that you gave me. So it's not like a super shoe in the traditional sense of Nike Alpha Fly or something where you get limited miles out of it. It's more of an in-between, like a faster training shoe. And I would recommend people try on the Mach X. It really, really, truly was yummy on my foot.
Well, Rachel described it as a lowercase s super shoe, which I really liked, actually. I think that's a helpful distinction.
I like that.
But I can see like 12 miles on the back roads here in Boulder. So we have like all these great gravel back roads.
Yeah.
I think a great use of the shoe. But I was your hype woman.
Yeah.
Like you weren't totally convinced. And never in my life did I imagine myself being a Hoka Mach X hype woman. I'm like, what's happening to us?
Yeah. You're just like, David, you got to get these shoes. You've got to get them.
Well, part of it was like, we got to come full circle on this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Nature is healing.
I do think in all of our hot takes, like we have opinions. We like to make jokes, but I do think we're like kind of open in this process.
Yeah.
And if you hate us, maybe we'll change our opinion eventually.
Just make better shoes. Okay. So the Mach X we're on board with. Another one, just to remind you, I have never worn this shoe, but Megan has sworn by it. It's the Saucony Triumph as a training shoe.
I love it. This is my yummy training shoe. It's a great shoe. So I don't wear it on trails because I would fuck my ankle over and over and over again, but it's great on roads, great on dirt roads. I feel like it's kind of like the Saucony Endorphin with just a little bit more plush.
Yeah. What I really liked about it is when I was grabbing it off the wall, I accidentally dropped it and then it bounced up like 3 feet. I'm like, that's really good for a training shoe. That must be some good foam.
And then you proceeded to drop a bunch of other shoes to see how they bounced. And I was like, David, we're going to get thrown out of the shoe store so fast.
Yeah. One of the most famous running shoe stores in the world is Boulder Running Company here. And I'm just taking all their shoes. Drop, drop, drop.
It's like
as baby Leo during all of this, our kid was just on the floor, just laughing at everybody that passed, like, ha, ha, ha.
just crawling around and pulling the stand on all the customers. It's like kind of being like a kid in the candy store, but going in and reaching and sampling one of everything. Yeah. It's like, oh no, don't do this.
So if we're recommending one shoe today, it would be the Saucony Triumph. We've had great success with it with our athletes as a road training shoe, just like your everyday shoe. You put a ton of miles in it. You actually did your first workout in a while on the roads, a faster workout in the Triumph, and you looked fantastic in them when they got up to pace too.
Yeah, I felt good at pace. That being said, I've never been in a lowercase s super shoe or an all caps s super shoe. So really I have like plated shoe, nothing to compare them to, and I'm excited to get a plated shoe.
Yeah, the problem is your feet are too small for them to be carrying any of your size.
I know, so I'll have to be an online order.
We need to have foot size justice.
I agree.
Why are they not carrying your 6.5s, Megan?
Well, it also might be because they're so popular that they've all sold out. So maybe. I don't know if that's the theory.
I don't know. I think that they're just not respecting your perfect sexy little feet.
My little small ass feet. Okay, but next shoe.
Okay, this is important.
But it's
because this is the experience.
It's called The Experience by Altra. And we've said for the longest time that Altra is very committed to the bit. The zero drop bit.
Altra is committed.
But it kind of makes sense from a marketing standpoint. Like if you're gonna do zero drop, go all in on zero drop. But you know what? They have 1 foot in and 1 foot in the experience because I think it's a 4 millimeter drop shoe.
The Altra Experience came out last week, a road shoe with 4 millimeter drop. I don't know how I feel about it. I thought Altra's commitment to the bit was inspiring to me because I'm like, you know what? We're committed to like the podcast bit.
Oh yeah. I was going to say, it'd be like us coming on here and just doing like Sad Boy Track Club, getting real deep in our emotions and like asking like,
It'd be like, I'm trying to think like what would be a good analogy for me. It's like after I DNF'd Grindstone being like, you know, this defines me. And honestly, it defines everyone. We should all be quite sad. No, it's okay to be sad. So when Altra comes out with this 4 millimeter shoe, I'm skeptical. And she hands it to me. And I was like, I think I said something like, this feels like a piece of cardboard on top of a piece of denser cardboard.
Styrofoam was definitely language in there.
But then I put it on my foot. And you know what? I had actually never put one of these Altras on my feet. And they say it's foot shaped. And it felt like fucking heaven on my foot. My toes splayed out. And I was like, oh, I get it now.
Oh, the toe box in those shoes. Yeah. I actually tried on a Topo for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was zero drop. And I was like, fuck zero drop. But you know what? I really like the toe box. And fuck zero drop is just a hot take.
And Topo kind of like impersonated Altra, I believe, in terms of the structure.
And they're committed to the bit.
But and zero drop is just like a personal preference. I think athletes can adapt to it. The science really doesn't back it up 100% of the time. But athletes that like it and commit to it, if an athlete commits to the bit, it can be incredibly beneficial.
Well, the curious thing though is, don't emulate a pro athlete that's committing to the bit because you never know what's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Like we have seen a lot of pro athletes in Altras put heel lifts in them.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's kind of defeating the point.
Definitely. But I think at the same time, you can adapt to it and it can probably be good for some forms, but it's not like everything. And you know, that's why they're finding their niche, but they've expanded out that niche into the 4 millimeter zone. Didn't get the shoe, but I respect it. I think it's cool. I think people should try it if you like those types of shoes and you're just curious.
Yeah. Do you have a type of athlete that you typically recommend a zero drop shoe to?
Basically when athletes need to change something up.
Yes. Yeah.
So for me, it's less about saying, oh, zero drop fits your profile well, and more an athlete needs just like they have constant lower leg injuries or constant hip injuries. Basically, you know, the general rule with zero drop or even more minimal shoes is that it transfers load down the kinetic chain. So like if they have hip injuries, let's say we'll do that. But even lower leg for me, the reason I say that is because sometimes you don't know what is the precipitating factor, like where the proximate causes are along the chain, which, you know, when I bring out my lawyer terms, I know I'm being serious and covering my bases. And so because of that, I think, you know, if something hasn't worked for you for a year or two, try a change.
Yes.
And Altra does, they're very comfortable shoes. It's like putting it on my foot, I was like, oh man, this is like a cloud.
Oh,
I enjoy this experience.
I would love to walk around in those slippers. I'd probably be like at my desk being like, it's time to sleep. It's time to get back into our ecosystem of a bed because I have Altras on.
Yeah. And so next is a shoe that you've been trying more, which is the Nike Altra Fly Trail shoe.
Okay. I love them.
You do.
They do feel like pillows on the feet, but with a lot of pop.
Okay. So this is the Nike plated trail shoe. And Nike has changed the game in road running. I mean, they're the ones that dominated the arena. They're the ones that have the scientifically best shoes, though everyone else is catching up to them on roads. So this trail shoe's come in. I saw a bunch at Grindstone. A lot of people were wearing it.
We saw a bunch at CCC and UTMB.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's always helpful to see. Granted, I feel like people at UTMB could wear sandals. Like some of the people there are so epic that maybe it's not the best test, but it is fun to see. Like, I feel like the Ultraflies, I could see at it uphill VK.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, it's like finishing UTMB.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think you're going to wear it more?
I do, actually. I want to see, like, I think for me, having a little bit more support, especially as I'm coming back postpartum, is helpful. And it's just, I am in such a love affair with my Speedgoat Evos,
yeah,
which I still have, that it'll be hard to make the transition. But sometimes, like, you can't have a partner forever. It's really hard. Yeah.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. I'm Green Day strumming my acoustic guitar here as you look at your Speedgoat Evo, which I think you're on your last pair, or are you on your
second? I have one other pair left.
Okay.
And it's really, I'm like already experiencing nostalgia for the end of my Speedgoat Evo era, and it's really hard.
I've been done with my Speedgoat Evo era for 3 years now, Megan, and still to this day, every time something bad happens, whether it's an ankle, whether it's like the Republicans in the House messing with our government funding. And no matter what it is, I'm like, if the Speedgoat Evo was around, this would have never happened.
We're just going to sit over here and strum Green Day as we think about nostalgia.
Okay. And so the last shoe we wanted to mention was the Saucony Endorphin Edge. This is Saucony's plated trail shoe. Maybe we should do a whole thing on plated trail shoes at some point.
Yes. Yeah. I do think they're changing the game a little bit. You know, I don't think you necessarily get the same return in on plates that you do on roads. Yeah. But I think they're kind of changing the game for performance.
Well, that's a good question. What I'd love is a bunch of control studies done uphill on the treadmill, mm-hmm, rather than flat on the treadmill. So yes, all the road tests are flat on the treadmill, and that would be good to have in trails too, or for the trail shoes. I'd really love to have it on ups because I think—
For the road shoes.
For all both. The shoes.
Yes, yeah.
Because what I've heard with the road shoes is some of them, especially the Nikes, can be subpar on uphills, that the plate can be structured in such a way that it launches you like kind of up and back rather than up and forward. That's more, you know, bro science. But with the trail shoes, obviously they're made for that. So I'd be curious. I found for me that the plated trail shoes generally do feel like a percent or two difference, which really adds up, and that's huge, and that could change the game. But who knows? You know, I think we also don't know exactly what the pros are wearing. So Jim Walmsley, for example, I've heard that he wears a prototype for his racing.
And I want it so bad.
I want it so bad, Megan.
Yeah, I'm like lusting over here. What's a song to illustrate that level of lust?
Backseat windows up. That's the shoe we like to fuck. But no, I'd love to have it as a third in our ecosystem bed.
Oh, for sure.
Jim's shoe, not Jim.
Yeah, well,
we do. No. Bad dog. Bad dog. But, you know, Jim's wearing that. And I think a lot of the other pros are wearing plated prototypes, mm-hmm, that might never come to market, but are adaptations of the current shoes on the market. So what I've heard with Jim is that it's like a Tecton 2X proto, but more with like Speedgoat build.
That sounds so dreamy.
Doesn't it sound good?
This is how I'm going to get over my Speedgoat Evo, is you got to get back out and get in there in the game. And I'm looking at it and I'm stalking it.
You're swiping on all these shoes.
Oh yeah. I'm going to DM it.
You're sliding straight in, lubricated slide in. So the Endorphin Edge, when I wore it, it just didn't feel right on my foot. Like, it just didn't work for my particular build. How did you like it?
Well, so they didn't have my size in it, which was a little tragic.
So you were wearing size, like, wearing clown shoes.
I was wearing an 8.5, and the 8.5 felt really good, but it was also hard to tell. When you wear an 8.5, it's kind of hard to tell where, like, all the parts land.
Yeah.
Why didn't you like it as much?
To me, I like softer shoes. For
yes,
the most
it
part.
Did feel a little firm.
And the way that plate is structured just felt a little firm for me.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that actually works. I'm sure it's a great shoe, but because I do love Sauconys in general, like I love the Triumph, I love the Speed, and I've heard their super shoes are great too. So the Endorphin Edge is one to try. The other one to think about is the Tecton X2.
I was just going to say that because you've been a Tecton X2 boy now. Like, you're pretty obsessed with it.
I like it. It's a little, again, a little firm for me.
Yeah.
And maybe this is just like, you know, my personal preference, but what I love about the road super shoes is that the Alpha Fly and Vaporfly and the Sauconys, like, they're all relatively soft underfoot, mm-hmm, which for me really helps with recovery. And I think that might explain a lot of the breakthroughs we're seeing with athletes, is not just the super shoes relation in single day performance, mm-hmm, but in the super shoes relation for long-term recovery. So when I wear an Alpha Fly and do a fast workout, I am so much less sore the next day than when I wore an old school racing flat. And with the trail super shoes that I've tried thus far, they're not soft. So like, you feel like kind of beat up more so than if you'd worn other shoes. But, you know, it's a kind of personal preference situation.
Well, it was interesting because on the drive home, so I tried the Adidas Adios, which is kind of like a racing flat.
Old school.
Old school type of racing flat.
Old school
flat.
Being like 2010.
Well, I felt like when I put it on, I was putting on waffles from like my cross country high school experience, which I ran like one cross country race in high school. And it felt a little strange. But as we were on the way home, you said, Megan, like, I really feel like putting you in a super shoe is going to extend the longevity of your career. Yeah. And I thought that was an interesting hot take about super shoes in general. And I do think we're seeing athletes have much longer careers. And there's like a whole host of variables that go into that. But yeah. I think super shoes feed into it too.
Definitely. Yeah. Especially for aging athletes out there that are doing road workouts and track workouts. Consider it.
Yes.
A softer super shoe, because they make harder ones too. Like, you tried the On super shoe, right?
Yes.
The Croc Boom, I believe.
I actually really liked it, except I would fucking ankle even on like the flattest of roads and that thing. So it was a little bit, it was very, very narrow through the ankle and through the foot. Whereas like other super shoes, like the Mach X isn't technically a super shoe, but it's like a lowercase.
Or the Alpha Fly. I mean,
it feels like it has a little bit more chonk to it in a way that I would be like you on the trail, just laying flat in the ground and being like, the trail was so beautiful.
We want soft, springy chonk. That's what we ask for shoe companies. Is that too much to ask?
That's like, I feel like that's how every shoe should be designed.
Yeah. Well, the On shoes actually had a really interesting catchphrase on the box. It said, built to last for 4 marathons, but infinite memories.
I like that.
Isn't that good marketing?
It's great marketing. Also in great marketing, you could see the carbon plate. And they did that specifically to show you the design. And I really like that. It's like, I feel like so often in shoes, we're like covering up the true value of the shoe, or like the true mechanics. I want to see it all.
I want to see it all.
Yeah. It's like opening up the human body. It's like, show me the organs.
Oh God. Well, that was going to, what I'm about to say was going to work before you started talking about organs. Yeah. That's what I was. So as I was looking up at you on the trail, I was like, show me it all. And now you're talking about like disembowelment. So it doesn't really work.
If you saw my guts, would you like them?
I would love your guts.
Really?
Gilfs.
Well, you're very squeamish.
I am. But it's different when it's like you.
A loved one. Yeah.
And no.
Well, hopefully you never have
just
to see
you,
them.
Just yes. you. I wouldn't feel that way about other people's guts. But
I'm
just,
glad.
Just your guts. I fully affirm and want to intermingled. Okay. So clearly we have a fun episode here at 4 a.m. I guess it's 4:30 a.m. now. So just some things that we're going to talk about. I wouldn't call this a roadmap because we've already gotten into substantive topics. We're going to have a few reflections on our experiences with COVID that I think might be relevant for athletes. Talk about some coaching theories, artificial intelligence partnering with Whoop. That's interesting. Some fun news stories, including talking about Jim Walmsley yet again.
Boom, boom with the Joom Joom is coming back.
A question about body composition, energy availability, and hot takes.
I'm so excited. We've already talked for 30 minutes. I should have like included some of that in the roadmap.
So true. There's the shoe part. But for the podcast generally, it's taking off right now. We have had our top weeks, week over week over week, expanding hugely. So thank you all. Wherever you listen, please give it 5 stars and give it, click follow, especially on Apple Podcasts, which really helps other people find it interesting with how the algorithms work. People love us just sitting around talking about Jim Walmsley.
I was going to say, I don't know about that. We just opened with talking about the ecosystem of our bed.
Yeah. Well, Megan, the key is, I think often when we do these episodes, we bring in a lot of new listeners, right? Like the Jim Walmsley interview especially got tons of people sharing it. And the weird part is a lot of people that shared it were it felt to me like they were saying like, I expected not to like their podcast, but here's the Jim Walmsley interview, like kind of like a backhanded compliment. And then, we like to have a couple good episodes around there and then one where we just throw them off the scent if they don't want to be here.
Yeah. If we were talking about like Sad Boy Track Club before, this is like enthusiastic as fuck track club. And I don't know if it's for everyone.
Oh, it's totally for everyone. I feel like it is quite good. So the general science is that podcasts are not always the best for athletic performance when you're listening. And the rationale I've always heard is that you kind of lose sight of what you're doing. You get a little bit less energy, things like that.
Actually, that's exactly how I am. Like, yeah. I can't listen. I actually can listen to us, interestingly. I think because, well, some of it is like, I'm doing work and I'm running at the same time because usually I'm like editing the podcast.
I can't have sex with other people, but I can masturbate. That's what you're saying.
How do I even follow that? But no, but for other podcasts, I like can't do it. Like, it kind of like lulls me into this like shuffle sleep and elevates my heart at the same time.
But I've heard the Swap podcast is different. To validate your statement, people say that it's good for running. So that's the key. We're just appealing to people out there that need a little bit of vibes on their run.
I like that. Well, I like to think about us right alongside people giving vibes.
Yeah. Well, we needed vibes last week because we talked about COVID. We had COVID. And throughout this process, I think it's been a learning experience for coaches, for athletes, and everything, because COVID is different. Right? Like you see that in how it interacts. Like you don't hear about long flu. Like long COVID is a thing. And we've seen athletes go through this process where some will get COVID and it'll be asymptomatic, no issues, doesn't change anything. Other athletes will get it and it'll affect them for a while. Other athletes will get it and it'll affect them for years. And that process is really confusing. And we had never had like a symptomatic case that we are aware of until this most recent bout. And I think it'll make me a much better coach in empathy and also in terms of understanding like the how these things can vary through like an on the ground personal way.
Oh, I totally agree. But do you know what would be 10 times worse?
What?
Is long neurovirus.
Long neurovirus.
That's a hot take because right around the same time that we had COVID, we also had the stomach virus in our family coming back from Chamonix, and that sucked shit. Like, I feel like symptomatically that was a lot worse than COVID, but COVID has lingered for a long time. And I feel like it's been frustrating now for both of us. I mean, I think for the first time in the existence of our relationship, an illness has hit you harder than it's hit me.
Yeah.
My previous thinking was that COVID was just going to make you stronger.
Yeah, you always said that. And every single time, I'm like, Megan, stop saying that. I'm just good at avoiding illness. And then you're like, and then I get it. And it kind of fucked me up. So obviously the initial sickness. But where I was most interested is what happens after. Mm-hmm. So I was reading a study actually that was done informally on athletes with wearables that found that resting heart rate on average took 79 days to get back to normal after COVID, which sounds insane. And I was kind of downplayed it in my own head. I'm like, that doesn't seem right.
That's a long time.
It doesn't seem very
It's almost early. 3 months.
And it wasn't peer-reviewed. Meanwhile, every other sickness, like the flu or whatever, it was average of 4 days to get back to normal. So clearly dealing with something different. And as I've been dealing with, coming back from COVID, my eyes were truly open on Thursday. So I did a double on the elliptical, same elliptical little fartlek section I always do with my doubles. On those sessions, I've averaged between 135 heart rate and 142 heart rate over the course of probably 25 or 30 sessions.
Oh, and wildly consistent too. Like you often share your heart rate graphs with me and it's like within, honestly, if you got 4 beats over that, I would be concerned.
Yeah. And the variation in there is just how hot was my run that morning? Did I do a workout? Things like that. So on Thursday, I did the elliptical session. This is coming back off COVID. And I just did what I always do. And by the end, I actually had a side stitch at minute 28, which is super weird.
It probably felt like mile 28.
Yeah, honestly. So I clicked on my watch to check out my heart rate. And it was 174.
Did it feel like, I mean, I know you had a side stitch, which is pretty abnormal, but did it feel to you like your heart rate was 174?
I mean, it felt a little weird, but I was like, I'm just coming back, whatever. But so my average heart rate was 161 to compare that to the 135 to 142 number. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even get all 30 minutes because I stopped as soon as I saw that. And that's clearly an after effect of COVID. I think in retrospect, the ankle getting fucked at Grindstone was clearly a blessing because if my body's doing that on the elliptical 5 days after Grindstone, when I didn't even push my body at Grindstone, there's clearly something on the cellular level that needs to repair. And I still feel that way. Like I feel a little bit like I've been hit by a truck, in general, and something I've almost never felt. And, I've been thinking about you a lot in this process with your autoimmune condition, feeling this way a lot, just being like, God, it's so hard when your body doesn't cooperate.
Oh, the uncertainty of injury, of illness is so hard, especially when you don't have like a set timeline. Like I think stress fracture are some of the hardest injuries to deal with, especially because they might have larger underpinnings of like lower energy availability or bone density or things like that. But they at least have a relatively straightforward timeline.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes like soft tissue injuries, like illness, it's so hard to predict that the uncertainty of that weighs on athletes. But I've actually had a similar, I've actually felt quite good post-COVID. And I think some of that is because I've been really focusing on recovery and sleep and treating my body well. And so have you.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like, I feel like that outsized focus has helped a ton.
I think also you felt like shit for so long.
Yeah.
And it's almost like my arm hurts. So punch me in the face. You know, it's like, who can really tell the difference at this point?
Well, also I'm doing the trio of miles too. Yeah, and I do feel like my body is kind of like biomechanically adapting to this slightly higher mileage. And I'm keeping things really easy.
Your body is banging right now.
Oh, thanks.
You look so good.
That means a lot.
That's why I fucked my ankle.
Right? Well, we're here in Candlelight.
Wait, has anyone ever had an ass so fly that someone fucks their ankle? Like, that is the new standard by which we judge asses.
It was one of the sweetest moments in our relationship.
I'm on the ground crying. Next time, I'm just like, your ass so fly.
I got to pull a Lauren Boebert out there on the trail.
Oh, yeah. The above the shorts action?
Yeah.
Lauren Boebert in the theater. Good pull, man.
They'd be like,
oh, good pull. Yeah. Really good pull.
They would have like, what is it, the heat map on the trail? And be like, what's going on out there in the middle of the forest?
Exactly. So we're, message to everyone that's coming off this illness or honestly any illness is be careful and listen to your own body.
Well, I think also follow your heart rate too, because where I was going is that I've actually felt really amazing, but then sometimes I'll look down at my heart rate and it's out of magnitude to the effort that I'm exerting. And so it's a reminder to me to keep being cautious in this COVID recovery and keep things like my easy very, very easy as I'm coming back, because I still feel like my heart rate response is drawn out of magnitude in a way that I wouldn't expect.
Definitely. Totally agree. And you know what's been helping my heart rate, Megan?
What?
Athletic Greens.
Oh, for sure.
I totally forgot to take it for a couple days last week.
Wait, what? Why?
I wasn't forget. So I felt not great. And so I stopped taking it for a day or two. I'm like, I just need to reset my whole mechanism. So I stopped taking everything.
Were you trying to just like go cold turkey so you had a stronger response?
Well, I just
are you addicted to it?
Maybe. I was trying to just change things up.
Yeah.
And it was not good at all. My resting heart rate went up 2 beats. It was a pretty negative experience. It's interesting to think about how I've adapted to it over time. But we swear by Athletic Greens. It helps so much with recovery and adaptation. I am back on 2 servings a day to try to get me through this COVID scare. And so drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. Almost all of our pro athletes take it at this point. The adaptogens are the main reason, but what it really acts as is a multivitamin you can use every single day for the rest of your life to, you know, support your training. And it's basically all you need to take. So drinkag1.com/swap, and there you get a bunch of freebies.
As an ultimate skeptic too, it's like kind of wild how much it works at this point. Like, we've seen that across tons of data from pro athletes, and I'm a little baffled.
Yeah.
Why is this stuff so good?
You know, and again, it's individual response though.
That's
true. I think
it's
a lot like the shoe discussion, and that it's great for a lot of people.
But it's like a super shoe.
Yeah.
It's like 4 to 6% generally across the board.
But some people aren't responders.
Sometimes it's like 10% and some people aren't responders.
Yeah, yeah.
My theory is that like you're a 10%, both super shoe and all caps Athletic Greens.
I do feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So actually try it, and you might not be a responder, which is fine. But I think there are people that are responders, and when that happens, it can be pretty magical.
Well, the ultimate mic drop actually is sometimes when people doubt Athletic Greens, you just send it to them for free and you're like, see what happens.
Have we ever talked about that on the podcast?
I don't think we've talked about that before.
I'm worried we're going to get a lot of emails. So sometimes we'll get skeptics emailing, which I get. Like, you're allowed to be skeptical.
I mean, I'm the ultimate skeptic.
You know, we love Athletic Greens. They worked hard to get us because we were so skeptical. But, you know, I'll send an entire pack of it, which I think is pretty expensive.
Yes, yeah. You think.
Well, thankfully, we don't have to buy it at this point. But I'll send some of our loot. And often they'll just be like, okay, that was actually pretty great.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. And then they purchase it. So we'll see. Yeah. Maybe that's the way to win over haters, is to be like, hey, here's it for free.
We're leaning into the bit.
Yeah.
That's actually the whole—
We're committed to the bit.
That's the whole thing about the podcast. Once you do the bit, just stay committed to it.
Stay committed to the bit. I love it. Okay, so let's get to a really interesting question from Patreon. Here it is. Just curious, what are you thinking about re-coaching right now? The Trowner articles always gave a glimpse into that, but wondering if there's anything specific on the top of your mind.
This is a great question, because I feel like it's actually much like the Hoka Mock discussion. Yeah. I feel like we have a lot of openness with how we coach, and we're like constantly iterating on different ideas and theories and keeping it within a general, like, I think it's actually important. It is important to be committed to the bit as coaches, that you're coaching within a general like philosophy, and then being open to other ideas that come. And we've chatted a lot about this.
Flexibly committed to the
bit. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting question too, because I've kind of dialed back my writing for Trowner.
Why?
I mean, really, I was kind of thinking about it this week. I need to write an article, and I just, you know, you're traveling, so I won't be able to. I think the life has kind of become kind of stacked in, and writing's the first thing to fall by the wayside, which is kind of sad. But
do you miss it from like a creative outlet perspective?
I have started to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just recently.
Well, you're a brilliant writer. So I want to make sure that like we keep structuring our family and our work and our running life in a way that like you can keep flexing that creative muscle.
No.
I do think it's like a muscle. Like, it does need to be flexed. I mean, yours is like you have like a genetic predisposition to having badass muscles.
I got some flaccid writing biceps right now. No, you know, I think Leah is a little bit more important than my dick jokes on Trowner magazine. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. That being said, Leo, speaking of some of the topics we have written about in the past, tested off the charts for his hemoglobin levels.
Oh, you were so excited about that.
Which is way more reward than any writing accomplishment I've ever had.
Well, I think the pediatrician was a little bit like baffled about how excited you were.
Oh my God.
I don't think any parent's ever been this excited about hemoglobin.
The big thing at 9 months is they test the baby's blood levels.
And you've been talking about this like since he was 6 months old.
You've been in charge of the iron supplementation.
Oh yeah. Well, he loves it. He has a vitamin and he's obsessed with it.
It's baby iron. And so you've done a great job there. We've taken him up to altitude. We did every little thing. We're like, this baby is going to break the system. Sure enough, 99th percentile hemoglobin levels.
You were so pumped.
So that's how you know we know what we're talking about. So when it comes to coaching, I thought just a few things that we could talk about that might be interesting to people. The first is, Okay, so we've talked a lot about things like intensity distribution and threshold training and Norwegian training. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes as a coach, and you see these trends on the broader scale, you can get caught up in them a little bit. And I think to a certain extent, I started to think about them more than I did initially when we started, you know, because you're learning.
Yeah. Was there one particular trend that you got caught up in?
Well, not caught up. I just think the Norwegian approach, mm-hmm. and a lot of coaches have felt this way. They're like, well, it makes sense.
Yes.
The mechanisms make sense. It's talked about a lot. Will I be letting my athletes down if we don't bring this in? Think Norwegian approaches things like more threshold training, so more moderate intervals, more double workouts, mixed with a well-rounded training discussion thing. You can go back and we actually did an entire podcast episode just on that. Mm-hmm. And what I found over time is the more I correlate data from our team to results, what I see is that power and speed at VO2 max, so like high intensity, is still by far the most predictive variable.
And you can think about that as VO2, so velocity at VO2 max.
Yes. Or VAM VO2, yes, which is like our climbing variable at VO2. And so what I'm thinking right now is kind of recentering on that throughout the process. And yes. We never lost sight of that fully, but I think sometimes I started to think that too much in aerobic variables and not enough in pure power/speed variables.
And I think that's especially important post-ultras too. Yeah. So I think sometimes like as you get more specific heading into an ultra, you can start to lean away from that a little bit and start to prioritize resilience and some of these like long-term ultra physiological variables that you need for ultra racing. But I think as soon as that ultra is done, I've been bringing athletes back to this VVO2 specific focus work. And I think that helps a ton for reinforcing. And so I don't think necessarily we have these like large periodization blocks throughout the year, but I do think we think a lot more about like micro and macro cycles at this point and how that relates into VVO2 training in the context of longer ultras.
Yeah. What you've done with, what you and Leah Yingling have done over the last like 6 years or whatever, mm-hmm. I think is a fascinating example of this in practice. So Leah, top 10 at Western States and UTMB this year.
A heck of a year.
Ultra champion.
Yep.
But looking at her training, what I see is, yes, she's fantastic at the ultra stuff, but why is that? Is it some specific practice? Yes, I'm sure. But what is really underscoring this? And I mean, what have you seen in her development when it comes to these variables?
A huge growth in speed. So actually, right before she took off, Leah raced at Bandera, she raced at Canyons, and this was in 2020. She raced a really fast 5K.
Yeah.
And for her, it was like a hilly 5K in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. So it wasn't like a super fast course. But for her, it was a huge 5K PR. And it was right before the start of ultra season.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, this is the year of Leah Yingling. And what do you know? It's been like the multiple years of Leah Yingling. And I think that progression only goes forward. But I think for me, it's really exciting to see athletes layer in like race a fast 5K, 10K. You don't necessarily have to do that, but at least be in like good 5K, 10K shape, prioritizing that VVO2 and seeing how that then with ultra-specific work bleeds into really fast ultras.
I love that so much. So how would you think about prioritizing this variable in the context of, you know, a training cycle?
Well, I think it gets back to what I was just talking about of reinforcing these principles in, especially like post-ultra. And then I think also to kick off like larger ultra blocks or larger. I mean, it doesn't even have to be ultra, but I think like reinforcing this consistently throughout the training cycle. Yeah. And then you can also do it throughout, like it doesn't have to be these like focused weeks. I think a lot of our focus on strides and shorter intervals, definitely, even in the context of like weeks that are more aerobic based or weeks that are more ultra based, I think those help a ton.
I totally agree. So I think strides are basically the key here to keep really in touch with it. Then short intervals, especially before builds for endurance races.
Yes,
like you want to be fast going into your builds. Like a speed base is pretty key. But then even throughout those builds, getting some speed stimuli, and all it can be super simple. It can be 10 by 1 minute on, 1 minute off. Like that was Megan's intro workout last week. It was 8 by 1:1.
I did 9 because counting is hard.
You did 9?
Yeah.
Oh man, how did I not count?
Yeah.
I gotta check you, man.
Yeah. Counting is, you know, I really like math, but sometimes the most basic of counting eludes me. Yeah.
I like that you go for the extra though.
Yeah. Well, actually, when I'm like in doubt, I go for the extra. And sometimes it means I do like 2 or 3 extra.
I love that. That's sneaky.
It is sneaky.
You're such a sneaky girl. So it's not about the number though. So we're using VO2 max as shorthand for power development. Mm-hmm. That's still mostly aerobic capacity work. So like, the whole idea is we don't give a fuck about that number. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was an amazing article that just came out this week that was called The VO2 Max Legacy 100 Years On. They just discovered this variable. It's pretty interesting scientific history 100 years ago, 1923. And the way they found it was kind of through happenstance. They were charting oxygen uptake, and they found that people just kind of reached an asymptote where they started to level off even as their power increased. So they would do more, put more power out, but their oxygen intake would stay level. And that became VO2 max, and it became, you know, basically it's a highly genetic variable, so we don't necessarily need to train it specifically. And the significance of it scientifically, the reason that science history matters, is it's kind of an incidental finding. Like, it matters, but it's not the thing that's driving performance. What is driving performance is someone's running economy. So the amount of energy they're actually using to go fast. And so VO2 is just essentially shorthand for saying something you can sustain for, let's say 5K, 10K. Like, that's where it starts to feel a little bit, that's where it is most relevant.
Yeah, damn. I feel like 1920s is actually earlier than I would have expected them.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, I don't know, like in the 1920s, like our medicine, I don't think it was like super evolved. So I've discovered VO2 max then actually seems pretty early.
Yeah. It's actually very fascinating to think about how quickly these fields have progressed
in
the big scheme of human history.
Yeah.
I was reading an amazing book, recommended to everyone. It's called Project Hail Mary. It's by Andy Weir, who's the author of The Martian. It's a very science-driven sci-fi book, but it won a bunch of awards when it came out in 2021.
Actually, I'm reading it right now.
Yeah.
And what I love is that within the first 10 pages of the book, I'm instantly captivated.
Yeah.
Like, he has a way of writing that even if you don't know, like, I don't like reading like the synopsis of a book, so I know what's coming ahead of time, but I can already see the book unfolding in the first 10 pages. And I personally love that. Like, we were actually driving yesterday and we had the discussion that I don't love books that only make sense in retrospect. Like, I want to be enjoying and swirling in the journey and kind of like seeing where it's going as it goes. Maybe I'm weird on that.
No, I love that. And I think if people like our podcast, they'll like Andy Weir's writing.
Yeah, that's great. That's
probably,
a great point.
We should probably reverse that. If people like Andy Weir's writing, they should probably like our podcast if they like running. So read The Martian if you haven't. But this book, Project Hail Mary, is great. And one of the things that made me reflect on, without giving anything away, is just how much humans' evolutionary process has been accelerated, with the agricultural revolution and then the industrial revolution. And so when you think about that, 100 years ago, just discovering things like VO2 max, and we're surprised. Can you imagine where these fields are going 100 years from now? It's incredibly exciting. Hopefully we'll still be doing the podcast 50 years from now, maybe not 100, and we can bring you all the updates as they come.
Oh, it's really exciting. I also love whenever exercise physiology intersects with medicine, I love it. And I actually feel like the discovery of VO2 max has been really important for monitoring disease. Like if you think about like cardiorespiratory disease, musculoskeletal disease, VO2 max is highly relevant. Yeah. And we're not even thinking about optimizing performance, we're optimizing health. And so it's kind of fun to think about the 100-year legacy.
Yeah, and as it relates to athletes, what we're really thinking about is mechanical output at these things. We're not thinking about aerobic output because that's not relevant. But what, you know, especially because it's mostly genetic, people aren't going to change it much. Unlike threshold, which can change a lot. That's why athletes that are really talented focus on it. And that's where the issue comes and where I think I rethought a little bit in the last year is the thing about threshold training, like the Norwegian training, is those athletes have VO2 maxes off the charts.
Oh, genetic outliers. Yes.
Jim Walmsley is like this too.
Yep.
Where he's like, it takes me 2 weeks of workouts to be ready to go. It's like, that's an athlete with an exceedingly high VO2 max genetically. And so as a result, when those athletes are already optimized mechanically for this, basically with 1 or 2 weeks of work, because it's such a high number that they put out so much power that their body adapts real fast. What they focus on is threshold, because that number, that output can change a lot more genetically over time. But that's very few athletes on earth. Mm-hmm. And so understanding if you're not one of those outliers with VO2 max, making sure your mechanical output around VO2 max is high all year round is really key. And that becomes especially key with aging for all athletes, even athletes that might have had an insanely high VO2 when they're younger, because this number wants to decrease. Your output of VO2 max wants to go down. So hill strides, short intervals, not every week, but off of a speed base, still doing them once every 3 or 4 weeks, probably. Is something I've kind of had to recenter myself on.
And you don't need the justification of a specific block to do this.
Definitely,
spice it up. Like, sometimes I do give specific blocks, but spice it up throughout the training. And this actually brings me, I think this is a great Patreon question that kind of layers this in. And this is actually a hot take.
Hot take.
So we'll bring a hot take in a little bit early. If performance at shorter distances on the road, i.e. a 10K, is a predictor or key factor in performance at trail ultras, then all ultra runners interested in maximizing their potential should periodically train for and race some shorter events on the road. Thanks so much for all you do. This hot take is more of a question, really. Do athletes not think it's important, want to avoid comparison or benchmarking, or simply do not enjoy racing on the road?
Such a great question. As always, join our Patreon to get feedback on all of these types of things. We answer tons of questions there. We do a weekly bonus podcast. We do Science Corner posts, patreon.com/swap, SWAP. And there, you're going to get access to our gear, and our hats just came in.
Oh my gosh.
We didn't talk about that yet.
Yes. Our hats are here. The hats are out in the wild. And I actually really love them. They're, I mean, I wasn't well, they fit my head and your head at the same time, which is a little bit of like a sizing conundrum because my head is very small and your head is large.
It's like a condom that fits a watermelon and a kiwi. It's like, it's a very interesting condom design. I was debating whether that made any sense, but you just gave me affirmation.
That was the best analogy of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to wait to send them out until we get the like shirts and singlet stuff, but we're going to have extras.
Until we have the crop tops.
Yes. And that's all going to be open to Patreon. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple hundred extras actually. So it's going to be awesome. You're going to love it. It's all white hat. So it's like really reflective, meant to be used for Western states or any like key race. So hat is fly as hell. Get that on Patreon, where you also get great questions and hot takes like this one.
And very spicy hot takes. I feel like our hot takes are even spicier on Patreon.
Oh my God. They're so good. Again, we should just do a hot takes episode at some point. But this is a great question or point. And I disagree. I don't think athletes need to race these events.
Especially because it might feel daunting. Like for me, I don't love racing on the road because I feel like as someone training for trail and ultra, I am leaving a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that I could be like progressing or could be getting faster. And to me, that like hurts my soul. And maybe
you know, you could go faster.
You know that I could go faster. Yeah. And maybe that's like a problem with my ego. But it's like, there's a part of me that's like, it pains me to race on the road. And also it's just not super fun. Yeah. And so I don't think you have to race, but I think that like, or actually even like maybe racing a trail 10K is a better way. To get around this because I just...
Short trail races would be awesome.
I don't love the idea of like hopping into a fast road 10K, but you can still use these principles.
I remember I used to road race a little bit when we were first meeting and I just remember being like, fuck this. Like why? There's trail races right there.
We did some serious ones and then we did some things like the pumpkin day 10K.
Oh, those were fun though.
Those are really fun.
I did the pumpkin day 5K. You did the pumpkin day 10K.
Yeah, I know. I was like, and if I could have done the pumpkin day marathon, I would have.
And if I could have done the pumpkin K 200 meters, I probably wouldn't have done that. So yeah, you don't have to race. This is more about reinforcing this variable. And, you know, every single study finds that once you reinforce this variable, you get more efficient at every distance. You're going to perform better at races, even like UTMB. Mm-hmm. So don't let it fall by the wayside. Yes, threshold matters, but athletes are getting plenty of threshold in the context of their normal training. Make sure your power stays high. It's all about power in the end. And actually a little story on that. I don't know if I'm actually... I probably can't share the athlete's name, but I started working with a professional athlete mm-hmm. who had been struggling a little bit at the elite level of sport. And with just 2 weeks of power focus work, so 30-second hill strides, some 5x3-minute hills specific to their event, they went and had a breakthrough race internationally. And I'll be able to give a name eventually. I just don't want to ask this person.
Oh, I do think that's a good call.
Okay, yeah. It's a good call not to give a name?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, you're affirming my... lawyer-like confidentiality.
Well, we take confidentiality very seriously as coaches. I mean, and also on the podcast too, because every once in a while we'll like go to extra ends due to confidentiality. I'm like, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
It's okay to say the doctor in Kansas.
But the point being, this athlete had, you know, a breakthrough in 2 weeks where their performance just skyrocketed. And it shows how quickly this can happen, but then make sure you're reinforcing it because all it takes is getting away from it for a period of time to kind of feel like you don't have this skill.
But once you've done it, I do think it's easier. Like your body has that musculoskeletal, biomechanical, and like cellular memory for it. So like reinforcing it becomes easier too.
Okay, so let's get just some kind of like rapid fire on other things we're thinking as coaches.
Yes.
To get back to the original question that was asked a long time ago about what we're thinking. Next is intensity distribution. What I've been focusing on a little bit more is making sure that the easy miles are actually easy,
yes.
Which is obvious. But I think sometimes as a coach, I'm like, you know, you don't have to pay too much attention to that because like that applies more to athletes doing really high volume or whatever. It's just so important. And I think 70% instead of 80% is kind of the number, but mm-hmm. make sure 70% of your training at least.
Especially if you're building up volume. So like for right now, for me, I'm like working into the trial miles a little bit, getting back to my more normal, like postpartum, I've been much lower volume. But as I've been doing that, it's like, the easy days have to be super easy. Yeah. And I feel like, and same goes with workouts too, as we talk about intensity distribution, like, yes, there are times for workouts that really take an athlete to the well, that work the central governor, that work, you know, some of these other things that we're thinking about, but intensity distribution on workouts allows athletes to do those big ass workouts that help us grow.
And I think the workout point's a great one. So if you're doing hard workouts, like really structured hard workouts, you need to be extra careful with your intensity distribution overall. If you're doing more relaxed workouts or not no workouts at all, you don't need to think about it quite as much. So pay attention to that type of distribution there. Number three, I've seen treadhills, just like as a random aside, really help athletes, especially with steep races. Mm-hmm. So uphill treadmills are your friend. I like 15% grade, but some athletes like 20% grade. Some athletes like 10% grade. You can add these on at the end of your runs. You can add these on as doubles. You don't need that much in a week to get really accustomed to climbing.
And talk about like sprinkling in a little bit of Norwegian theory in here too. Yeah. I think the uphill treadmill doubles are a great way to do some of the Norwegian principles without necessarily like breaking down the body, especially for athletes that have a little bit of a busier schedule. So
yeah.
I really like uphill treadmills, or athletes that are more injury prone too.
Yeah, definitely. Number four mm-hmm. is occasional long tempos. I feel like I've always programmed into training the idea that athletes are doing shorter races more often.
Yep.
But often they don't. Like so in other words, if they're not, sometimes going up and doing even 1 or 2 hour steady run blocks, I think can be really helpful.
How do you prescribe the effort for that? Because yeah. I feel like if you see, let's go do a 2 hour tempo on your training log, it
could, yeah, yeah.
like mind blown emoji. How do you describe that to athletes?
I would sure say moderate.
Yeah.
And if it's an hour, you should say 50K effort and mm-hmm. then progressing as you go
yep.
so that it gets a little harder. If it's 2 hours, I'll just say moderate, just relax, purposeful, but nothing too hard. I try not to give exact prescriptions on that because that can get spicy real quick, but it's okay for those to end a little bit harder, I think.
Yeah, I feel like that's where you learn a lot. I also learn a lot about fueling too, because yeah. sometimes I feel like some of these fueling implosions happen when athletes go out a little faster in races and then they're holding on for longer distances and trying to sustain that.
Yeah.
And I actually feel like the long tempos from a fueling perspective can help athletes troubleshoot some of those issues in training as yeah. opposed to in racing.
And looking back, I mean, this is one place where it started to change a little bit last year, seeing Kipchoge's training come out and mm-hmm. then Killian Dornett's training come out, both of which strongly incorporate these types of principles.
And honestly, if we broke down Jim's training,
yeah.
like he didn't talk about this on the podcast, but I feel like if we went into his Strava file, we would actually probably see this in there. And knowing Jim and now having talked to Jim, I bet you that was intentional.
Yeah. So yeah. I would say once every 4 to 6 weeks on that, you don't need to do it that often. You can do shorter tempos outside of that, like 20 to 40 minute type stuff. The 1 or 2 hours gets a little spicy, but I think it's really good for race specific preparation.
And depending on the athlete, sometimes I just do it once a training block.
Yeah,
especially if they're doing races or like other long tempo structures, because
yeah, if you have races, you don't need to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, treat those with plenty of like, I feel like an aerobic rebuild week after you do, especially if you get into that like 2 hour territory, can be super helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and then a quick hitters on some emerging areas we've always been thinking about talking about, but we want to tee them up. If you're interested, you can shoot us an email and we might talk about them more. One is increased amounts of downhill tempos or downhill intervals. Not something I prescribe very often, but just throwing it out there.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, let it flow.
Yeah.
I feel like it's great also if you're doing downhill races like Western States or Black Canyon, really helpful to do this and get in the flow and build the confidence. Another thing that I've been thinking about too is we've talked about like some of these big training blocks in terms yeah. of like 3 day blocks or 2 day blocks heading into longer ultras. But I feel like vert blocks and potentially even extending those vert blocks over a longer duration of time is something that I've been really thinking about.
Yeah, that resilience is so key and can really break people down. Another one, double workouts, Norwegian training. We talked about that a little bit. Hiking intervals, not something I've ever given specifically. I always say you will do treadmill hikes.
Actually, sometimes. I'm a little surprised to hear you piece those words together because it's really not something that we've like ever talked about.
Yeah, it's just, I'm starting to think that sometimes it might be worthwhile to have people like absolutely fucking hammer hiking.
Oh, fun.
Not something I've given very much, but thinking about it based on seeing some other people's training.
I've done this a little bit, like in a little bit more of a structured hiking way, but never in the interval way.
Yeah,
and so I'm
yeah.
excited to talk to you about this. Also, I would love to do it. Like, I feel like all of these training principles we like to try ourselves.
Yeah.
And please give me some hiking intervals.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just for like the curiosity's sake.
Put Leo on our backs.
Oh my gosh.
Go out into the neighborhood and be the neighbors that get them to call the cops.
Actually, he's getting progressively heavier.
Yeah.
So it's becoming a lot. Actually, last night, so in order to keep him up last night so that we could record the podcast early this morning and have him sleep in, we walked him around the block in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because I feel like most people walk their kids to get them to go to sleep. And we walk Leo yeah. to get him to keep him up.
He's just like, he doesn't really talk yet, but he does make a lot of noises. And he has a noise for tree. He has a noise for dog. He has a noise for mom. Not sure if we realize the noise for dad yet.
Oh, it's just the best like excitement squeak ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really cute. Actually.
We're trying to interpret him like he's an alien or something. Then heavier strength training, something we've always eschewed a little bit, but I think there might be times and places for it, particularly for aging athletes.
Yeah, I love that. Especially consistent. Yeah. If you have like a background of consistent strength training and then pulse that in a little bit more, that's where I really think about
and
that.
That's one place like if you're interested in this, I would say get a 35-pound kettlebell or a 50-pound kettlebell and start to incorporate that a little bit in like the swap ultra legs routine mm-hmm. that you see where on exercises where it's possible. That'll give you a really good feel about how your body responds. Usually I think a 50-pound kettlebell can accomplish just about anything you want. I don't know if runners need to be throwing around like 300 pounds ever.
Oh, I totally agree. I didn't think you were going to say kettlebell when you started the phrase with get. I thought you were going to say get a professional to help you out, but you should also probably ideally do that too.
Okay, and then two supplements that we've seen some people take, but we're unsure about. We don't know the research on.
Oh, we do know the research on, but I feel like it's mixed.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Well, I would say we're not comfortable like doing a full breakdown yet.
Well, I feel like we're not comfortable being like, you should take that, because I feel like a lot of the research is mixed. And honestly, like some of the mechanisms in which they impact endurance performance are mixed.
Definitely.
Too. Yeah.
So those are creatine and NAD plus. Both have some very interesting research.
We should do a deep dive on what we know. I mean, I feel like we can have a very open conversation about like the pros, the cons, where the science is still lagging, because it would be really fun to go into these in more detail.
Yeah.
Do you have athletes that you ever suggest these to?
I generally don't. For creatine, a little bit, because the research is pretty substantial in that area. Mm-hmm. And it's usually athletes that are like chronically sore, aging athletes that describe loss of strength, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just haven't seen it proven at the very top level of sports enough. I've seen a lot of studies, which are interesting.
Yes.
But I haven't seen enough, like, both research and applied empirical data on the best in the world, which is always what I want to look for, because I'm like, that's where the margins are slim enough that you're starting to see the trade-offs that might be made that you can't really see in a 6-week study intervention.
I agree. That being said, though, how often do we see the best in the world talking about their supplements?
That's true.
It's like, I feel like the best in the world very rarely talk about training, let alone supplements.
But I feel like
especially with cycling, like teams are starting to open up about like the nutrition science, and
you almost never hear creatine from the cycling teams.
Yeah, exactly. I think some of it might be because when you take creatine, you do get associated water weight gain.
Like in the muscles.
Yeah, in the muscles themselves, which I actually think can be a good thing when you think about the mechanisms of creatine, especially for athletes that might need that. Yeah. But I think maybe that's not why we don't see it in cycling.
It is interesting when you think about it that almost every pro that goes on the record about their supplementation just says, oh, I just take like vitamin D and iron. And we know that's not true. Like just statistically, in terms of actually knowing athletes, it's not true. Like there, some athletes, yes, but you know, they're like, it's one of the reasons we recommend Athletic Greens, because it takes away all of those concerns about like random shit you're taking that you're unsure about. It says, hey, here's stuff that's research backed. We appreciate it. But also other companies that we're not sponsored by that do that is like First Endurance, let's say, like their multivitamin, or you know, they make Optigen, things like that. I've heard that Optigen which is just like a pre-workout supplement, is taken by 80% of the cycling pro peloton.
That's wild.
I don't know if that's true. That's just like what
someone... Where'd you hear that?
Someone that was sponsored by them said that. When people come to the US, they'll stock up on that.
I wonder what people say about us and Athletic Greens. They're like, the roaches say this stuff is magic.
Yeah, well, true. Yes, but the point being, like, we're open about that type of thing. And I'd be curious, maybe in the future, what we should do in every interview is really dig down and ask that question.
Oh, really ask. Yeah. I feel like it's often for us like an ancillary thing. Like the interview is going, we're like, oh, we need to ask about supplements, but we've already talked so long about training. So maybe we just be more forthcoming with it at the outset.
Yeah. I think that'd be super cool. Okay. Do you want to talk about Whoop and AI?
Let's do it.
All right. So this is just interesting because we've talked before about AI and athletics. And this is a press release from Whoop. When you ask the Whoop coach how to improve your heart rate variability, how to manage your sleep, or how to optimize your morning routine, you'll get personalized answers based on the millions of data points that Whoop already knows about you, all thanks to the power of AI.
And what is your take on this? I feel like I have mixed thoughts. I think AI is super cool. We've done some conversations about, I feel like we're just getting into the frontier of how AI is going to impact the world and impact the endurance world too. So what's your take?
Well, I think that this AI is just OpenAI. They use ChatGPT, that Microsoft actually bought this year. I think their market cap for OpenAI itself is like $100 billion now.
I'm surprised it's not more, I mean, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's wild to look at. I was also reading that the NASDAQ had the best first half of the year in decades.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all driven by 7 companies. All 7 of those companies rely on AI in some form, NVIDIA, OpenAI, Microsoft, things like that. And I think it's fascinating. And seeing that come into athletics is important, I think, because clearly the market, the money is going into this area. This is not crypto. This is the future.
Mm-hmm.
So how it applies to Whoop or things like Whoop, I don't know how relevant it is.
Well, I feel like it could be useful for like data mining.
Yeah.
So like when you use Whoop, you have tons and tons of data. And like, I don't remember like data from 2021 or 2022. And I feel like you could ask it various questions to string together data points.
Yeah.
Like one example I was thinking, like if you had COVID in 2020 and you have COVID now, you could see how long it took for your heart, granted different strains, different contexts, so many different variables in there. But I feel like it'd be interesting to see like how long it took your heart rate to normalize under one COVID situation versus another. So like there's various examples, but I feel like you really have to work to think about data mining examples that makes this relevant.
What I would love is if they incorporated everyone's data. I'm not sure if they're actually doing that.
They're doing that.
So they're incorporating everyone's the recommendations to an individual?
Yes. Well, I mean, yes and no. They're not going to be like, I bet you if you ask it, like, what is the average resting heart rate of our population? Okay, yeah. It might not answer that. But it's like...
But I want to get down and dirty with the freaky shit that people would write in their Whoop journal.
Oh, yeah.
They're probably not bringing in...
They're definitely not bringing that
from
in.
From a data privacy point of view.
Because in the Whoop journal, you can be like... Like you can log like
that's when
sex and like creatine and
cocaine.
Yeah. Can you log cocaine?
I'm sure you could.
Yeah.
I think you can log anything.
Yeah.
They're really creative with what you do. And you know, I think it does raise some interesting points. Like the future of all of these, you know, applied physiology, psychology, everything will start to become much more scientific.
Yes.
And where it goes from here, who knows?
Yeah.
But it is the future. We should probably get with it. Bad things, I do worry that there's just like privacy concerns in all of this. That
you're like the last person I would expect to say privacy concerns. So the fact that you're raising that point makes me think that a lot of other people are thinking the same thing.
We just don't know where the data is coming from. Maybe privacy isn't the right word.
Well, I think
I'm not worried about that so much. I'm more worried about like the data crawling that is required in these LLMs and like ChatGPT and stuff is so extensive and brings in so much information that it can't tell us why it's getting the answers it's getting.
Yeah.
So when we start trusting it, we're trusting something with like uncertain provenance. Kind of like, it's like the art that, you know, when you buy art, you need to know the chain of custody to make sure it's authentic.
Oh, that's a great analogy. Yeah.
And I don't know how you do that with AI. I don't even know if it's possible.
Yeah. It would see like a fake Picasso and be like, it's real.
Or whatever. I mean, So I think it does make me a little nervous, but at the same time, I'm excited because this is the first application I've seen in this area. I think Strava AI would be so cool.
Oh, that would be so cool. I bet you Strava has talked about it or thought about it.
Yeah.
I feel like from my perspective too, though, it really matters the input that you put into the AI. And I have questions about that from a Whoop perspective. Like sometimes I feel like if you're asking AI these questions, it's assuming that every single piece of input is concrete and correct.
Yeah.
Whereas when I look at Whoop, sometimes there's variation. Like if you go for a run with a Whoop metric on or a Whoop device on, sometimes it tells me my heart rate is 240.
Yeah.
And if AI assumes that as fact, it's going to interpret, you know, the outcomes differently.
I think AI is smart enough to be like, maybe we won't trust the Whoop activity data.
Yes.
That's what you should ask it. If I open this, what I'm going to say is, hey, is this data right?
Because Whoop has helped a lot of athletes, but I do feel like there are some blind spots in it. And I feel like activity tracking is one of those.
And I guess that's one point of when you start introducing AI within certain data, what comes next?
Yeah. Especially like, you know, data sets are not always accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a little scary.
It's so scary. Okay. Some other stories here that we've been really interested in. First, I thought this was really cool. Transvaal Khania is leaving the UTMB World Series.
With perhaps the best quote of all time.
Yeah.
As they did it. And I've seen this quote like populated everywhere. It's like, we just want to recover our essence. And what a beautiful like marketing campaign. Yeah. We're going to recover our essence.
It's kind of the how Stella got her groove back of race directors.
Yes. Yeah.
So Transvaal Khania is trying to get their essence back. I don't know exactly what they mean. Probably they're referring to like kind of the corporate feel of some of the UTMB stuff.
Well, I feel like you can't get UTMB stones from Transvaal Khania anymore. You can't like qualify for UTMB races. So I imagine trying to like, I'm curious if other races will follow suit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. This is the first one to do it.
Yeah.
Other
races have done it.
I don't think they've left the UTMB World Series. I think it's the first one that joined and then left.
Oh, okay. I was going to say races have like publicly said they're not going to join the UTMB series, but I feel like they haven't joined and then left. That's a good point.
Yeah. It's like the races that, you know, decided not to join. It's like me saying like, Megan, I am not going to be 6'6". I just decided I made that decision unilaterally. I'm not going to do that.
Me as a human, I'm not going to join the EU.
Yeah. Think about these running stones, Megan. Aren't you going to miss those stones?
Oh, the stones. You know, people like hustle real hard for stones these days.
And I think that what it points out is just so interesting to think about the next 5 years. We don't know where it's going, but from a business perspective, think it's going to be a time of great upheaval in this world. Consolidation, yes. But then when consolidation happens, there's also splintering.
Yeah, there's backlash. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's going to be lots of niches that need to be filled.
Do you think the backlash is going to have enough force to take any type of dent at UTMB? I mean, UTMB has an enormous share at this point.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think at this point, they're riding a wave in just the perfect way.
Yep.
Or perfect time. They've just timed it perfectly. And I don't see that wave slowing down, and I don't see them being pushed off.
Because it's a tsunami.
I think it's what it requires, essentially, is them to be pushed, them to be competed with directly by someone that has similar amounts of resources.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be like a death by a thousand cuts situation.
Well, it's a tsunami, and you've had a paralyzing fear of tsunamis since you were like age 5. So yeah, UTMB is just stepping up.
Yeah. We have mixed feelings, but okay, number two, Jim Walmsley just did the Nice 115K after he did UTMB.
And
just,
he ran away with the race.
Yeah, and he won, and he got a golden ticket to Western States.
Well, I love it that Jim Walmsley still has to get a golden ticket.
Yeah.
I feel like at some point we should just hand it to him. Yeah, but I do like that he had to qualify.
That's true. He should just have a golden ticket shoved up his ass at this point. Just keep it there.
But he's back on Strava a little bit. It was fun, actually. I mean, I do feel like there's data points missing from his training. He definitely didn't take Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday off of 1 week.
Yeah. Well, maybe he did.
Maybe he did. Yeah, I know. He's leaving it up to mystery.
He's just being like so coy.
Yeah, I like it. He's playing with us.
Yeah, it's so sexy. No, but you know, amazing that for his physiology to do this right after UTMB, very Courtney-like.
Yes.
You know, and which is pretty interesting. And I think Jim probably wouldn't go for this golden ticket unless he was planning to go to Western States and reset the course record. That's my theory.
That's actually true. I hadn't really gotten there yet. Yeah. I was like, wow, he just did UTMB and got a golden ticket. And I hadn't thought about the idea of like heading to Western States. I hope it's a cool year. That's my hot take.
I don't think it matters.
Yeah. What type of time do you think he can run on a cool year?
He's going sub 14.
Yeah.
No, I mean on a cool year?
Yeah.
Who knows? 13:30. But I think he's going sub 14. And as long as it's not like 110 degrees, I think that we're about to see something incredible. Like I think Jim would not risk his body right after UTMB like that unless he was on a mission.
Well, it's coming back together because he's moving back to the States, at least temporarily.
Yeah.
Oh man, my mind is swirling. This is so much goodness.
Okay. Do you want to talk about the study?
Yes, actually, there's a great study that just came out. It's, I would call it like a narrative review of a bunch of different, I mean, so many different ultra studies all in one that they're reviewing. It's called The Limits of Ultra Study Towards an Interdisciplinary Understanding of Ultra Endurance Running Performance. And Sean Bearden is the PI on it. He's been a long time commentator in the running field.
Science of Ultra.
He's been an excellent researcher. And I feel like if you're just getting into coaching, this is the go-to article to read a synthesis of everything. Like, I feel like every article they cited in there, we've probably at some point like read together. Like, it's really cool the scope of research they put into this.
Did you have any articles cited in there?
I did. Yeah.
No, so it's really good. Why aren't we talking about it in more detail in the podcast, you think?
Well, I feel like we've gone into a lot of these different points in like a lot of detail. So for us to summarize a narrative review of all of this, it would be like, here's a summary of the last 300 podcast episodes. Yeah.
Perfect. It is a wonderful study. Recommend everybody check it out. It's kind of fun to read on your own. So it's one of the intro studies, I think, in terms of understanding the field, not just for coaches. I think if you're interested in this at all, print it out, read it in the same way that I'm reading about like school start times, even though it's totally irrelevant to my life.
Is it open access? I'm trying to remember if I accessed it through like Stanford's library.
Yeah. Well, they have PDFs online.
Oh, sweet. Awesome.
So the researchers shared them. You can just write the study title, which is the Limits of Ultra Study PDF. And I'm sure it'll come up, as a open access option.
That's amazing. Having this type of article open access is like a gift to the coaching and athletic
community.
And if
people can't find it, email me and I'll just share it.
Well, maybe that seems like a public, we shouldn't do that. A copyright violation. I guess if it is open access, then we're good.
I've found it open access. Yeah. Like I don't know if the Limits of Ultra Study is like the Hollywood writers trying to get their information protected and striking.
I'm always paranoid that like my library institution access, I'm just like gifting to the masses.
You think Sean got into academic publishing to make cash off of whatever the $49.95 that they charge people? It's such a racket.
It is a racket, publishing. Actually.
And the academics don't get anything from that. So
no. Yeah.
Who's going to come at us?
It's very wild.
Okay. All right. Do you want to get, let's just go to hot takes.
Let's do hot takes. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. I'm scrolling on down. Oh, dude, we're skipping some great studies here. Okay. First one. RPE, so perceived exertion, is the single greatest running metric available, but can also be used to control intensity for a variety of other activities, including but not limited to level of participation at dinner parties, quality of parenting, lovemaking, etc.
This is a great hot take.
Yeah.
I love this. I actually, as I'm sitting here, I realize that my intensity distribution in the rest of life is horrible.
In what way?
Like, I'm pretty good now. I've gotten to the point now where, like, easy running is easy.
Yeah.
I'm, like, moderating my intervals. I have no self-control when it comes to, like, quality of parenting or lovemaking or like some of these things. It's like they're usually a full send.
Yeah.
How about with you?
You could just go 10 on effort every time.
Yeah. Like I can't help it.
That's a good point. Maybe we need to do some good old fashioned 3 lovemaking, some 105 heart rate equivalent.
Yeah. Lovemaking. I feel like heart rate drift just happens.
Yeah.
It just happens. Just always progress to a 10.
Okay. So this hot take is actually teaching us that we need to start to understand our bodies.
Yes.
And our demands.
Yes.
And
in all of life.
Yeah. And just ratchet it down. Just like all the way down.
Do you think our lives will be improved by this?
I doubt our lovemaking would be improved by it.
I know, but like other, okay, what about like parenting or dinner parties?
Parenting. No, I think parenting's got to be a 10 all the time.
Yeah. And dinner parties, we just, if we're together, it's just kind of like podcast mode.
Yeah. But I guess like, I want you to go to 2 a little bit more with like work stuff.
That's true.
These are really good. You're the best mom. You're the best wife. But like,
There's a lot of areas in life that we have 2s.
Like what?
Our house upkeep is okay, definitely like a 1. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's 0. Yeah. There's 0 perceived exertion.
Yeah, so our logistics is like a 1.
Yeah.
So yeah, we definitely have 1s on a lot of stuff.
Okay. So I love that one. That was great. Number 2. Coaches put mile ranges on a program, not because they don't care if you run 6 to 8 miles, but because they're secretly trying to see if you're a boss ass bitch or a wimp. It's their secret way to gauge what kind of athlete they have on their hands.
Ooh, interesting. Was this one of our athletes?
No, this is just a Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes I give ranges actually like post races to let athletes feel things out.
Yeah.
But as soon as an athlete does every single highest mileage on the range for like more than 2 weeks, I'm like, fuck this. Yeah. No more ranges.
Yes. Okay. So Megan, you're doing the reverse. Like you're trying to find out, like, it's not the boss ass bitch or wimp framework. You're trying to find out if they're like an overachiever essentially.
Yeah. It's actually, I feel like it's a boss ass bitch to do a 6. If you're given a range of 6 or 8 and you choose a 6 and you respect and listen to your body, that's boss ass bitch mode.
It's so fucking perfect. I love it. Okay. Do you want to get on to a listener corner?
Let's do it.
As always, we love you all. Thank you so much for listening. It's kind of amazing to be here in the pitch black, talking to you all.
I know. It's so fun. I like these candlelight vibes.
Yeah.
We just need to bring our Patreon or our podcast crew into the candlelight vibes.
I see like a little hint of light off on the horizon. So that'll be really nice in a few minutes.
It's coming.
It's so coming. Okay. This is a little bit of a longer listener corner. I might skim it a little bit. It was because of your podcast that I finally learned about training theory. That's what got me in the door after long months of struggling with performance issues and low energy. But what truly hooked me 2 to 3 months ago from that very first episode I downloaded was the instant and overwhelming sense of recognition and contagious joy and love you both share in abundance with so many people. Given the way we tend to consume media and stories on our phones, via podcasts, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, I always assume that any sort of connection I've felt to the work of those I follow, while genuine and inspired, was always ultimately parasocial. But Swap is a true community that transcends the podcast, and it's your electric positivity that encouraged me to lean into self-love. I tried for years to ignore this voice in my head that talks me down and questions how I show up in every interaction. I've had it since I was a kid. That anxiety led to years of self-medicating and addiction to substances, or anything that made me feel less anxious, more relaxed, or that simply turned down the volume of the voice. Needless to say, ignoring the voice and turning to substances was exhausting, depleting, and led to a kind of burnout, especially since my life is full of interactions. My professional role is public-facing in an area that feels small, and I sit on some boards and have always been drawn to community engagement. I have now felt acutely the tremendous impact of committing to self-love. I've honed several positive affirmations and can say them with more confidence every day, thereby combating that negative voice in my head, which is getting quieter. My husband and friends have been so encouraging and supportive too. I have a much healthier relationship to substances now and feel like I can truly look at myself in the mirror and say, I love you and mean it. Swap has been instrumental to that end and in the way that I feel so much more connected to my work and better able to show up and lift others up too. And then her journey with running has also been fantastic, but I wanted to focus on that part where she's able to look in the mirror and say, I love you to herself.
That was beautiful.
Isn't that incredible?
Also, David, you crushed the reading of that because it's like kind of dark in here and the words were small. And I was like, how are you doing that right now?
Yeah, I pasted it as like a wall of text when it was actually well formatted in the email. That was a mistake, but I crushed it, I think.
Yes.
Love me.
You looked in the mirror and you're like, I can do this.
Yes.
Yes. No, but this is beautiful. My gosh, this is beautiful. Yeah.
And it's why, you know, we put ourselves out there a little bit is hopefully through this, you can understand that like being a little bit silly, being a little bit fun, also crying and sharing all of your shit with the world can be uplifting, not just for you, but those around you. So to this listener, you're fucking amazing. And we can't wait to see where your journey goes. But to everyone out there, if you have that self-critical voice that we all have a little bit, just turn to it and be like, look, I love you too, to that voice. It's something I have to do all the time. I woke up in the middle of the night last night when I couldn't sleep and was just feeling like kind of down on myself a little. Yeah. Like this, my body is so off right now and my heart rate's so off and everything just kind of feels shitty.
Yeah.
And I tried to be like, instead of saying it's going to be okay to myself, because that's not as helpful at 1 p.m. or 1 a.m. I was just like, David, that's a sign you care. And that's fucking awesome. That's awesome. You're great. You know?
I love that. Caring is great.
Yeah. Caring is great.
Caring is really great.
And being sad is great.
Yeah.
But like, you know, also be a little silly about it.
Also, if you've ever felt like the weird person in the room, there's a community for you. Like, yes. I feel like I felt that way all the time. And then yesterday when we were out running on our Saturday date, I saw like 9 people in the random middle of the woods. Like, hadn't seen people for miles. And almost, I think like 80% of the people I saw said woohoo or huzzah. And it was like this mind-blowing experience of having felt so out of place for so long in life. And then all of a sudden I'm in the forest and like 80% of strangers that I don't know are just like woohoo or huzzah. And it was such a cool moment for like podcast community and just like the weirdness of the trauma community.
Yeah. It's the 80% that are really uplifting. It's the 20% that get you on true crime podcasts. Is that
the
way it
feels? That's a great point. Uh-huh. Yeah. Actually 40% if you're in the East Coast woods.
Yes. Yeah. But you were wearing the swap hat, which was the identifying feature, I think. So like my guess is that people usually recognize us a little bit, maybe after the fact, but when we have the T-Rex on, they see us.
They're like, oh yeah, that's the T-Rex.
Yeah. So when these get out into the wild through Patreon, that'll be like the ultimate identifying thing where people will be at races and stuff and be like, woohoo, huzzah to people they see. And no one will end up on True Crime Podcast. It's going to be amazing. Unless they don't buy the hat.
Yeah. Or the hat will end up on a True Crime Podcast. And that might be the ultimate advertising.
No publicity is bad publicity. And we love you all.
Woohoo.
Huzzah.